The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com. Student debt is taxing young people's mental health. This article was written by Rainsford Stouffer on May 16th, and there is a note. This story was supported by the journalism nonprofit, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. As the first person in her family to go to college, Catherine fought hard to get her bachelor's. After transferring from community college to a four-year university, she worked as a barista and a line cook, trapped in a cycle where she'd take on extra hours to cover her bills, then feel too tired to study. But it still wasn't enough. She regularly felt desperate for money. She put books and necessities, like hygiene supplies and food, on credit cards, accumulating debt she's yet to be able to pay off. By the time she graduated in 2018, she also had about $14,000 in student loan debt, which she described as causing a lot of mental strain. "I have three main problems with my mental health," Catherine, now 30 and using a pseudonym to protect her privacy, told Teen Vogue. "One is family issues, one is myself, and one is debt, because it's a trap, and there's no out." After she graduated, Catherine was working the night shift in a psychiatric hospital about 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. Monday through Thursday, picking up weekend shifts at the coffee shop for extra cash. She even leaned on friends who made more money. Her credit card debt from college has only grown due to car problems and other emergency costs. It's now somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 a year, she told Teen Vogue, and came from paying those college expenses. Thanks to issues like her car breaking down and other emergency costs, she hasn't had enough money to catch up. Whereas the initial pandemic student loan payment pause meant Catherine could pay off medical bills she'd incurred, the end of the pause spelled the end of relief. She had to stop seeing her therapist before payments resumed because she couldn't afford the $90 per week and budget for eventual payments. She's supposed to be on antidepressants, she said, but couldn't continue paying an additional $90 a month for telehealth appointments with a psychiatrist on top of the therapy payments, and decided not to fill the prescription since she wouldn't have access to a doctor. At the end of the 3.5-year-long payment pause, borrowers have discussed cutting back on essential purchases in an effort to make ends meet, or how the loss of financial breathing room has impacted their lives. For some, the pressure of student debt and resumption of payments meant delaying or foregoing mental health care, even if debt was contributing to their mental distress. "Student loan debt is absolutely exacerbating the mental health crisis," Aisa Conchola-Banez, policy director at the Student Borrower Protection Center, told Teen Vogue. "We have also heard from borrowers who report delaying routine medical and dental care and putting off buying necessary medication because of the way that their student debt is straining their budgets." Maya Chavez, 21, a first-generation student who graduated early, told Teen Vogue that many of her family members didn't go to college because of the cost. When Maya was in college, she waived the fee that would have afforded her on-campus physical and mental health care so she could put those funds toward bills. I put my mental health on the back burner and my physical health on the back burner for the fact that I didn't want to have to pay for it later, she said. By the time she was out of college and payments resumed, I remember getting that first bill and I'm like, Mom, I can't pay this, Maya recounted. At that time, she was working three jobs, and she says there was no way she could afford rent, her phone bill, and her car payment with another $175 bill on top. Her loan payments were temporarily paused under economic hardship deferment when she was on Medicaid, but the number still loomed over her. It's kind of like a terror-type thing, she said. It's always in the back of my mind. Kristen Lindgren, the professor and clinical psychologist at the University of Washington School of Medicine, whose study found a relationship between student debt and stress, said, when you have the larger financial uncertainty that's just happening demographically to this age group, then you throw in student debt, then you throw in uncertainty about if and when and how much your payments are going to be, that's really, really challenging to navigate. In addition to the psychological toll of student debt, the stress of payments can make foregoing care or support feel like the only feasible option. Arielle Cooperberg, professor of sociology at University of North Carolina, Greensboro, conducted research alongside Joan Maya Mazzellis, associate professor of sociology at Rutgers University, that found students who took out loans reported being more likely to delay medical, dental, and mental health care to save money. 6.5 years after graduation, 46% of graduates who had loans reported delaying mental health care in order to make ends meet, Cooperberg told Teen Vogue. About 30% of graduates without loans reported delaying mental health care. Maya now works as a campus organizer for RISE, a nonprofit focused on making higher education more accessible and affordable, and receives benefits through work. But she said she doesn't want to see a doctor because she doesn't want to accumulate another bill. That includes counseling, which Maya noted can be expensive. It's a lot to say, okay, like, I'm going to go talk to somebody about my issues, but to pay $200 for it, that could have been my groceries for the month, or I could have paid for my student loans for that month. In her work with RISE, Maya connects with students who say they don't have time to talk to a therapist or even decompress. Like Maya, many of the students she talks to are working while in school, and in some cases, just trying to afford to finish. The expense could also exacerbate existing disparities in access to mental health care and who is most profoundly impacted by the student debt crisis. As reported by the Education Trust, Black borrowers are among those most negatively impacted by student loans, and 64% of survey participants reported that student debt negatively impacted their mental health. Other research outlines that people of color, those with low incomes, and students who are parents are all among those who might be impacted by student debt and also face barriers to receiving health care. Aisa Conchola-Banez of the Student Borrower Protection Center noted that the student debt crisis shouldn't be seen in a silo. It is a crisis that is impacting workers and families across their financial and personal lives, impacting their financial stability as well as their mental, emotional, and physical well-being, she said. In Catherine's case, she said you work hard to get to the point where you can talk to a doctor, then realize you can't afford it. She'll spend some time thinking about it, she said, and one day wake up and be like, okay, I'm going to get help, and then I'll realize I have $7 in the bank account. When she thinks about mental health and student debt, what she's noticed is that more people than not struggle. And there is an additional note. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, help is available. Please find more resources on accessing help at teenvogue.com. If you or someone you know is going through a crisis, you can contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988. Our next article from the teenmagazine.com. Why you shouldn't hide from your teen angst. This article was written by Nirja Bhatt on May 14th. Slamming doors, storming out, shouting, swearing. I'm sure it all sounds relatable. I'm sure we've all been there, done that. You're not alone. But then why do people make us feel like we are the only ones prone to throwing occasional tantrums? Why are teenagers all over the world cornered and made to feel like it is solely our fault that we experience fluctuations in estrogen or testosterone levels? I have lost count of the number of times that I have been labeled a typical teenager by adults. After mood swings, I often feel dismissed and ignored, with no one trying to understand or discover its root cause. According to the National Institutes of Health, nearly 1 in 3 teens experience an anxiety disorder, which is a major concern. Hopelessness, self-doubt, and brutal comparison are on the rise because of vicious traps like social media and peer pressure. Based on a national survey conducted by the University of Maryland, 85% of high schoolers succumb to peer pressure, with its onset visible in children as young as 9 years old. Not only is the battle with others a constant struggle, but the fight for our own identities adds to the stress and dilemma. And each time we express our frustration, we are told that we should not give any heed to teen angst. Hearing a word with such a negative connotation right after teen makes us feel like there is something wrong with our age group itself. Maybe it's our fault we give in to the challenges and unreal societal expectations of having everything figured out. But what if I told you that being angsty in your teens is not so bad after all? No matter what everybody else says, grumpily shutting yourself inside your room can bring some surprising benefits. It can lead to profound self-introspection. Your friends are all dating and having fun, but you're too afraid you're going to mess up your schoolwork if you invite any distraction. Everybody is getting internships and jobs when you're struggling to make time and days seem to just slip away. You're in this weird phase between being too young and too old and are expected to socialize and be a part of society, but any childish acts are strictly prohibited as you might come across as stupid. All of this adds to your already intensifying angst, and you isolate yourself from everyone. What happens next? A few breakdowns later, a feeble yet obvious light begins to illuminate from within. Self-awareness has never been so ignited. After eventually growing tired of melting down, you are forced to think about things that you like, not what society wants you to like. You will realize that nothing can be so important that it makes you compromise on your well-being. If you feel like you're not ready to expose yourself to the dating world yet, who cares? If you're content with the work you're putting in at school and have hobbies that help you unwind, nobody wants to know how many side hustles you have and how much money you make off of them. All the nervousness would probably make you realize what works for you and what doesn't. If being in social situations brings immense anxiety, odds are that you're not a people person, and that's fine. You do you, and anything that brings you angst or discomfort is likely not meant for you. Acknowledging angst can be liberating. The trick to make your peace with your angst, whether it comes in bouts or seems to be a perennial shadow, is to remind yourself that almost 16% of the world population is in the same boat as you are. Angst comes in different forms. For some, it's self-inflicted and arises from constant overthinking, while for some, it's imposed by external factors like school, toxic relationships, lack of sleep, etc. Whatever your angst looks like, tell yourself that it's going to be okay. It's a bad feeling, I know that. But once you stop beating yourself up for feeling things that are completely normal for a teenager to feel, you'll bloom, and how. Become an optimist. Start looking at the silver lining to every cloud, and your angst won't feel so unbearable anymore. It will be integrated into the vexing process of growing up. Acknowledging the monster internally, or talking it out with a friend / parent / therapist, can be freeing. After all, your fears vanish into thin air when you give words to them, and they are only the strongest when you allow them to eat you up from inside. It can be your storm before the calm. Sometimes we need to feel a little low to come out higher. A slight push toward the ground can lead to a rebound with greater velocity and vigor. If you start thinking of your teen angst as inevitable and begin to find ways in which you can emerge stronger, the game changes. You don't have to be at your best when the angst is at its peak, but once you've killed it a little, whether through journaling, talking, or engaging in your hobbies, the rooted feeling of not being good enough can act as a motivator and inspire you to push your boundaries and get out of your comfort zone healthily. If you feel like you could do a lot more, in most cases, you're probably right. You know your potential best, and you owe it to yourself to try and better yourself. Staying away from harmful feelings of comparison and self-loathing, and instead directing your angst into a way of self-improvement, can be the best way in which you create an angel out of the otherwise devil. Conclusion. If viewed with the correct perspective, teen angst can lead to the most growth you will ever experience. All those complex, not necessarily happy feelings are a sign that you are evolving and that you are making your ideas and principles that others might not always agree with. Stop letting people bring you down for having thoughts and emotions that are beyond your control. We should start to embrace everything that comes along, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we only have a few teen years to celebrate. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Joe Biden's commencement address draws protests, walkouts at Morehouse College. This article was written by Ashley Carter on May 19th. While President Joe Biden gave a commencement address and received an honorary degree from Morehouse College in Atlanta on Sunday, May 19th, several students staged pro-Palestine protests, some turning their backs and others walking out. The students who protested cited the president's ongoing policy decisions in Israel's war on Gaza. Before Biden took the stage for his address, Morehouse valedictorian D'Angelo Fletcher gave a rousing speech calling for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, and was met with applause from both the crowd and Biden, who also shook Fletcher's hand. From the comfort of our homes, we watch an unprecedented number of civilians mourn the loss of men, women, and children, while calling for the release of all hostages, Fletcher said. The audience also included Morehouse alumni vocally supporting Biden during the ceremony, giving the president a standing ovation as he approached the stage, according to video taken from the event. Meanwhile, Some graduates who wore keffiyeh scarves and Palestinian flags opted to turn their chairs away from Biden for the duration of his speech, according to the New York Times. Other graduates walked out of the ceremony as a sign of protest, though the Times noted that Biden's speech was largely uninterrupted. When he finished, attendees in the VIP section chanted, "Four more years." "I support peaceful, nonviolent protest," Biden told students in his speech. "Your voices should be heard, and I promise you I hear them." He also said he is working around the clock for an immediate ceasefire. Young people across college campuses have protested the war with demonstrations taking place nationwide. Pro-Palestine students are demanding their schools disclose and divest from companies with financial investments or economic connections to military companies connected to Israel. After Morehouse announced that it would welcome Biden to deliver the commencement speech this year and grant him an honorary degree from the historically black college, current students and alumni pushed back in the Atlanta area school, urging them to reconsider. In one open letter to Morehouse's faculty from a group with the Atlanta University Center Students for Justice in Palestine, Dr. Marlon Milner, class of 1995, asked that Morehouse not award an honorary degree to someone morally complicit in a war in Gaza. Morehouse alumni Martin Luther King Jr. challenged a historically courageous Lyndon B. Johnson on Vietnam after the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. "That's moral courage, not moral complicity or moral complacency," Milner wrote. Morehouse does produce businessmen, but let's not fail to produce better men. Morehouse does produce politicians, but let's not fail to produce men of principle. This is a defining moment where actions, not accolades, will matter. The October 7, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel killed 1,200 people. Since then, Israel's attacks on Gaza have killed more than 35,000 people, according to the Associated Press. The outlet reported last week that the Biden administration agreed to send another $1 billion sale of arms and ammunition to Israel. President Biden's support in states like Georgia will be immensely important as the 2024 election approaches. The rematch between Biden and Republican candidate former President Donald Trump will shine a spotlight on Biden's handling of the war. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Sabrina Carpenter's birthday dress is fueling a D-pop controversy. This article was written by Alyssa Hardy on May 15th. The yellow slip dress that Sabrina Carpenter wore for her 25th birthday was an instant viral fashion moment. Aside from the fact that her stylist, Jared Elner, revealed the look was inspired by the full-length silk dress Kate Hudson wears in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, a surprising twist was that Carpenter bought the dress on Depop. While secondhand shopping is not a novel idea for most of us, getting the "That's That Me" stamp of approval from someone we just saw on the Met Gala red carpet is a win for vintage enthusiasts. On the other hand, the dress, or rather the store where Elner bought it from, kicked up discourse about what secondhand fashion actually means for shoppers today. On social media, some people pointed out that the seller of Carpenter's dress also listed fast fashion items like Forever 21 shorts for over $200, noting that they are rare and vintage. Not only is rare the antithesis of fast fashion and patently absurd to claim, the shorts were actually reselling elsewhere for no more than $15. More so, there were other items like Hollister shorts purchased at a low cost but selling for over $90. You get the idea. First, let's get out of the way the fact that markups are not surprising or new. They are part of the resale business, and for many of these sellers, a Depop storefront is exactly that. You're paying for their curation, and there are a ton of people shooting their proverbial shot at writing great product copy with the hope that a buyer bites. But is it fair to pay a 2,000% increase on a product that was originally sold for $25? Probably not. There's more to this than just overpaying or predatory marketing. It's the sheer volume of fast fashion that you have to wade through when shopping secondhand these days. Walk into any consignment store or scroll through Depop, ThredUp, and many other secondhand platforms for 2 minutes, and you're bound to come across dozens of items from brands like Forever 21, Shein, and Zara. Selling those pieces and keeping them in the cycle is better than, say, disposing of them or selling them off to global secondhand markets. But the issue is that the brands have overproduced to the point that we are losing the best parts of smaller scale secondhand shopping. The cheap trend cycle, built on prioritizing consumerism over the planet and the people who make clothing, has contaminated the one thing we could all agree is a great counter to the overwhelmingly fast trend cycles. It's why some resellers, like Vestiaire Collective, have banned fast fashion from the platform. Thrift flipping aside, new pieces are recirculating into the market at an alarmingly fast rate. It's not just about jacking up prices for people who want to shop for affordable clothing, the ethics of which we will likely debate for a century. It's that we've gone from encouraging resale as a climate solution to having to deal with a whole new problem of drowning in unprecedented quantities of fast fashion, marked up or not. In the recent past, shopping secondhand meant using your skills to find the most unique pieces, and the biggest problem, besides some unsavory stains and smells, was wading through dated clothing that may need a tweak or two. Now, with unregulated fast fashion growth, you have to make sure you're not being accidentally taken on a piece of clothing that's not made to last and originally retailed for significantly less. Who wants to work late, more, for something that's supposed to be fun? We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.